I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Join us as we explore health, community, and culture from a holistic perspective. Health topics addressed on our show are for information and entertainment and should not be taken as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Kevin. I'm here in the studio with Sam. And tonight we are hosting our guests, Dr. Tom Taylor and Catherine Hollingsworth. And they are the owners of the new holistic health center in Palmer called Alaska Healing Touch. And we welcome you to the studio and thanks for being with us tonight.
Great. Welcome. It's really great to have you guys here. One of the things that we've noticed in our practice is that we have a lot of people who have environmental sensitivities, and Catherine and Dr. Tom specialize in treating people with environmental sensitivities. We see a lot of people with black mold issues. We see people with yeast. We see people with chemical sensitivities, perfumes, all sorts of things, you know, pesticides. We were even talking earlier before the show started about electromagnetic radiation. So we're going to talk about all of those things on the show this evening. But first, we want to get a little sense about Catherine and Dr. Tom.
I understand, mm-hmm. Dr. Tom, as a chiropractor, you have a specialization in a Blair method, is a technique specializing in the cervical spine.
Yeah.
So we want to talk about that as well.
Absolutely. Sure.
So let's start with Catherine, and just if you could give our listeners a little bit of your background, how you came to become interested in working with people with environmental sensitivities, and you know, how you got from where you, because you started out as an interior designer, correct?
Did.
Yeah. Okay. So a little bit of your journey, how you started out there, and how you got to where you are now, would be great.
Sure. I have lived in Alaska quite a long time, but I had a hiatus in there where I went to New Mexico and worked at the lab in Los Alamos briefly. I was studying environmental architecture. That was my passion, a highly creative person. And
what is environmental architecture?
Well, relating the spaces that you dwell in, not only the way that you are something appealing to you aesthetically, but the way that it functions for you. And I practiced interior design in New Mexico, but began to get sick with migraines. And found that other designers and architects were getting sick. And one day the light bulb came on and I realized, oh my gosh, it's the things I'm working with. That path led to where I am today.
And the things you're working with, meaning materials?
Materials, building materials, fabrics, all of them had sizing, new carpeting. The standard complaint was migraine, but a lot of people were having a lot of trouble, allergies, asthma, horrible migraines.
So you're talking about a lot of things with, like, VOCs, mm-hmm. volatile organic compounds.
Exactly.
A lot of chemically treated, like, I know carpets are treated mm-hmm. so that nothing grows in them. I actually heard a story once from somebody who had talked about knowing somebody who had a carpet factory, and that he'd been in the factory 20 years prior to telling me this story, and they used to have a big problem with vermin, you know, with mice and rats and bugs and everything. But then the newer carpets that have been coming out recently, like, you couldn't find anything. Like maybe one dead rat. So they're doing such a good job treating the carpets to kill all these, you know,
all
bugs
life forms.
And all life forms. So what is that doing to you? So, you know, if the mice and the rats and the bugs are not living in the carpet, how's it affecting the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a very, very good point. And another thing, too, is in the Southwest United States, a lot of pesticide use. That was something I wasn't prepared for. So there were paths and places that get you where you are today. And I wouldn't have chosen to sign up for the University of Hard Knocks, but that's where I have my experience. I actually got diagnosed with chemical sensitivity myself and spent 2.5 years bedridden with migraine.
Who diagnosed that?
It was a doctor in New Mexico. It's quite common and more than we would know. Unfortunately, it's highly political. So people are talking among themselves and seeking validation. That's the one thing that we really find people don't have.
What was the criteria for diagnosis at that point? Like, was it a process of elimination? Well, we can't find anything else wrong with you, so it must be that, or was there some kind of blood test, or what exactly happened?
At that point in time, we didn't have the sophistication, the testing, and so on that we do now. Certainly, we didn't have the social media, and I think that's helped people quite a bit. what you did is you began to talk with people. Somebody would make a comment, oh, that sounds like environmental illness, or that sounds like somebody I know, you should talk to them. And then largely people self-diagnosed, and then you'd ask questions, well, who deals with this? And then you'd get a list of doctors' names, and you'd begin to kind of go that path. But what was so obvious is getting some things out of your own home. For me, getting fragrance out of the house. And when you eliminated that and you began to have more days that you could function and think mm-hmm. better, mm-hmm. it was a no-brainer.
And so many of our products, mm-hmm. you think about some of the, like, dish soap and laundry detergent, and the thing that I hate the most, Febreze.
Oh, this is, you know, this yeah. is really toxic yeah. stuff, uh-huh. and yeah, people are just fumigating their yeah. cars, their houses.
Yeah.
I can, you know, sometimes people will come into our office, and I can smell Febreze on them, you know, and it's just so, but they're living in it, so they don't mm-hmm. necessarily even smell it.
Oh, that's very true. You become desensitized.
Yeah.
But even things like cat litter, I mean, you know, yeah. and air fresheners in cars, and I mean, there's very few products out there unless you're purposefully shopping in the organic food section, or you're
exactly.
making your own. Almost nothing doesn't have fragrance added to it. Even, you know, soap, shampoos, conditioner, all that. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to get away from, right?
It is, and we're finding now that first of all, the fragrance industry is largely self-regulating, and that's something consumers don't understand. But more importantly, it's hidden in places that you would never imagine. And so the exposures are happening passively. I call it ambient poison.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And our mission at Alaska Healing Touch is, first of all, we have a fragrance-free clinic, which sounds not so hard, but it's much more difficult to do in real life. We advocate taking your shoes off at the door because you track in a lot of the toxins that are in our indoor air on your shoes. So the shoes come off, or we have little booties that people cover their feet with, and then fragrance free. Well, by it's not meant to be a punishment. Please don't come here unless you're fragrance free. It's meant to be a moment of education. And those two things kind of define the way that we can begin to empower people. So to bring that whole experience of what is happening to people. And Tom and I were sharing this earlier. People don't come to a clinic when they're feeling really well. They come when they're in a crisis of some kind. And having lived through this experience myself, and the average person with chemical sensitivities sees an average of 10 doctors before they find out what's wrong, spend thousands of dollars, and are beat up emotionally, physically, and financially, and to the point where they finally do understand what's happening. And then it's like, well, now what do I do?
And not only that, I'm sure they often end up with diagnoses like chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, and you've got some sort of autoimmune disease, but we don't know what it is. Maybe mm-hmm. it's a virus. So they've been treated often, like they've been put on meds for some of these things, and that doesn't do any good.
That's
and likely
true.
Makes them worse.
That's,
right?
That point mm-hmm. is very well taken
yeah.
because it is the truth. And more importantly, women are smaller body mass. These things happen for women much faster than for a larger body mass, a man. But we're seeing these things in young children, and babies are born toxic. So the one thing that has happened...
And what does that mean, babies are born toxic?
Well, there was a study done. Ken Cook of the Environmental Working Group did a study in the Pacific Northwest where he measured the toxins in cord blood. And it was horrifying to discover that our babies are born quite toxic.
It's about 140 different chemicals in cord blood, right? And it's
yes.
climbing.
And
yeah.
and in fact, some of them, like DDT, have not even been around for two generations. Mm-hmm. They're that pervasive. So we do know that these are harmful, but more importantly, they're pervasive. They are damaging DNA in generations way past where we quit using them, because they don't leave. They don't leave.
And we're dumping more into the environment all the time. I don't remember what the number is, but there's every year more new chemicals approved mm-hmm. for use.
Oh, yeah. So most of them have not yep. been tested.
Sure.
Our job at Alaska Healing Touch is going to be to screen people. And I'll let Dr. Tom tell a little bit more about his chiropractic mm-hmm. approach. But he and I met from two different angles. He came from the health fields with a discovery that not everybody could get cleared out through chiropractic. I came from this long road of having to find a way to live in the world. How do I recover my functions? How do I get to go back to work and have a meaningful life after nearly 20 years
of wow.
not being able to leave my own bedroom? Mm-hmm. The world changed a whole lot, and there are times where I feel like I live in some kind of an altered reality. But I began to reach out to people around the globe. Social media has been an enormous help for that, because for people with chemical issues, you cannot really leave your home. How do you get to make a life for yourself? And the social media allows that to happen.
Yeah, so I definitely want to get into that next, but I do want to introduce Dr. Tom, because he's been sitting there quietly, not saying anything, so I want to have our audience hear his voice. So same thing for you. I just want to hear a little bit about your journey and how you got here, and what is Atlas Chiropractic, the technique that you practice.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. First of all, I grew up in Montana. And might as well start at the beginning. I grew up in Montana and finished high school in Delta Junction, Alaska. And then when the pipeline was over in 77, I moved back and we had purchased a cattle ranch. And I worked that for off and on for about 12 years until I met a chiropractor. We became good friends. He was a bow hunter and a third-generation chiropractor. So he had pretty steeped in chiropractic. His four brothers and sisters were all chiropractors. And so we were talking about chiropractic before I became one several years earlier. And so one day he decided, he says, you know what you ought to do? You ought to go to school to be a chiropractor. And when you get finished, you can practice in my office with me. So 7 or 8 years later, I ended up practicing with him for 3 or 4 years. Well, during that time period, also, I had been to lots of different chiropractors, and I got very good results with all of them. But it was mostly back pain and my neck pain and stuff like that.
And just for our audience, I mean, I know a lot of people think they know what chiropractic is, but let's step back a little bit. And what is it like? What is a chiropractor? Yeah. Why would you go to a chiropractor? Just so people have that sense.
Okay. Well, if you want to go back in the history of it, it was discovered in the late 1800s. And D.D. Palmer supposedly restored someone's hearing with a chiropractic adjustment, and then coined the term chiropractic. And so, but now it's kind of limited in some states to where it's limited to where just musculoskeletal functions like that. Mm-hmm. And at least that's what they can bill insurance for. Mm-hmm. That's what insurance will pay for.
Okay. So like in terms of your insurance company, if you're going to your chiropractor, the only thing that they can say that the treatment's going to work for is basically pain sort of issues, you know,
basically.
Back pain, neck pain, joint pain kinds of things. But
chiropractic
treats a lot more.
For quite a few more.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I found. And so of course I was in college in chiropractic, in Palmer Chiropractic School. And at the Fountainhead, and I had actually was getting adjusted daily, and I was just feeling rotten the whole time. And I thought it was helping, but the next day I'd be the same. Well, then I realized I went home on break, and my buddy that I spoke of earlier says, "You won't believe what I found." I said, "What?" He says, and he learned it out in Lancaster, California. And it's called the Blair work, an upper cervical specific adjustment technique that, when we traced it back, it was B.J. Palmer's technique back in the
And I want to interrupt you there for the audience's sake. So upper cervical, you've got three different parts of the spine, right? So there's the cervical. Go ahead.
Correct, Sam. Upper cervical is the upper part of the neck, focusing on the first two vertebrae out of alignment. And then there's the lower back. Well, there's full spine chiropractors and there's upper cervical chiropractors. And it's been kind of a battle, but I don't want to say it's a battle, but some of us think it all starts the whole spine. Some of us think that it's the upper neck. Some chiropractors think it's the feet that's the main primary. And some of us think it's the pelvis. Well, in my experience, what happened with me, and I've been adjusted by all these different chiropractors, lots of them, and I've got good results, but the one upper cervical adjustment I got cleared everything. Well, when we traced it back to the 30s, B.J. Palmer, when he was in his early 50s, is when he discovered what's called the hole-in-one theory. If you get the atlas just right, the rest of the body will follow suit.
And when you say that, what does that mean that the rest of the body will follow suit? If there's subluxations or in the spine down lower in the thoracic or lumbar?
When you say subluxation, it's the word meaning partial, the word sub meaning partial. A luxation is a dislocation. Put them together, it's a partial dislocation of any joint in the body. And it usually causes some kind of an inflammatory process that alters the electrical current in a nerve flowing by or the spinal cord within it.
And maybe causing a spasm.
Causing disturbance downstream from that nerve.
Okay.
I call it electrical wire. Okay. And when that happens, so there's primary and there's secondary. And the primary one is if there's a short in the spinal cord itself or if it's a pinched nerve. That's just a breaker switch. The other one's a main cutoff break. Mm-hmm. So back to my experiences, when I had been to all these different chiropractors on campus getting adjusted, and when I got this one specific adjustment, everything cleared out. And then when I got back to my buddy back home, he ironically he experienced the same thing. And he adjusted me. And I was totally amazed. So I'm back on campus now 3 weeks later looking for this work. And where is this work at? Well, it's been hidden. There was a lot of controversy, a lot of political family feuds. So when B.J. Palmer, the discoverer of this hole-in-one theory, when he died in 1961, his son took over the school and brought his teachers in, and they just did away with all B.J.'s work. Well, they took B.J.'s work, and these two old fellas, they were old when I met them, they were in Lancaster, California, and they called the Blair work. They continued his work. But they didn't donate any money to the colleges. They said, if you want to learn our work, you got to come to us. The rest of these techniques, they all donate money to the colleges, and they teach their work on campus. That's the difference. So we had to go to them to find the work. And it's quite unique. And it gives you a good study of the upper part of the neck, the bones.
And when you say everything cleared out, could you be a little bit more specific? Like, what did you notice? Okay. What kinds of changes did you experience?
What happens when you get the upper neck just right, the rest of the body always compensates. Whether you're out of alignment, if it goes out of alignment, your body compensates to that, creating secondary subluxations throughout the spine. Or once you get it in line, everything seems to disappear. Well, that lower back don't hurt anymore. You didn't even touch it. Why? Okay, and for a lot of people, that's the key, but it's not everybody's, okay, but there's some people when you have trouble, this person just isn't clearing out, getting adjusted all the time. Well, I always look to the upper part of the neck to make sure that's free, and then when that's freed up, then the rest of the body can follow suit. The rest of the spine can follow suit. Then when you adjust those areas of the spine, the full spine, the joints move better. The individual heals up faster, quicker, and their whole spinal alignment lasts longer.
So how do you go about? I know I've had a lot of patients in the past who've been concerned about, well, I like going to this chiropractor because they don't touch my neck, they don't do the neck thing. I've had people say that. Now,
well, you know, it's the neck adjustment that's the quick turn on the. Is that the technique you're using, or
no.
is it?
Oh.
I just
no.
want to finish with my
go
question.
Ahead.
So what? So I've had people say that to me, and people seem to be concerned about that adjustment. So what I'd like is for people to hear how you go about evaluating the neck to see, you know, whether it is out of alignment, and then what kinds of techniques do you use? You know, some people use the stimulator thing, or some people actually do a manual adjustment. Like, what's your process for adjusting the neck, and what are you looking for to know that it's come back into alignment the way you want it?
Well, over the years, I practiced for 4 years with Dr. Matz, my buddy, and then I practiced 8 years on my own. And we did x-rays on almost every person come in. And we studied these x-rays to see which way the bones actually misaligned. And we looked for, there was a special set of x-rays where you looked at the actual joint surfaces. And when one surface was overlapped against the other surface, then we knew that joint was misaligned. And that was our contact. And so we found the angles to those joints on the planes, on the XYZ planes, and we delivered the forces of the sum of the vectors into those joints to where it broke up that fixation and created an unlockment without the sounds of the joints popping. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's not like a snap, crackle, pop thing that you feel in your neck when you do that.
Right. Now, again, these are the upper two segments in the neck.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't have a disc associated with that area of the body.
This is atlas and axis.
Atlas and axis. Yeah. They don't have a disc, so they're very unstable to begin with. So we don't, in our techniques, we don't say we don't pop and crack those two joints. The rest of the joints below that sometimes need more force, and you can get away with that.
What is that cracking, popping sound?
Well, it's a different theories. It's a release of pressure inside a capsule. I kind of describe it as snapping your fingers underwater. There's pressure because you're creating a friction right there, and it's underwater, and it kind of muffles it because we're underwater. They say it's sort of some kind of a gas release or something like that under the skin, but. But if you have it in the upper part of the neck, the theory is, and what it was passed on to me, is that's too much resistance. When you get it popping in the upper neck, there's too much resistance, and the body doesn't accept it as well. So when you position the head and the neck just right on your adjusting table, and you use a drop piece, little piece with the right angles, or an instrument, it's more of a precise sum of the vectors, like I say, the end of the area, and just creates an unlockment. It just frees the joint up without the sounds of the joints popping, less resistance, the joints last longer, and the spine stabilizes quicker.
So if I'm lying on your table, what would I actually experience as a patient?
Some people experience a warmth in the back of the head after the adjustment, okay? Some people say, what'd you do? You know, or what's that? Because you won't hear the joints popping, and the headpiece will clack down. You hit wood on wood where the headpiece clacks down. And but the research said, back in the research when they did all those X-rays, his initial research, Dr. Blair, 80% of the population will have a certain misalignment. Only the angles will be different. Okay, so about 6 years ago, my X-ray machine broke, and I couldn't find parts for it. And I had to help these people, so I just kept adjusting these people what I thought it was based on range of motion, based on the heat detection. I have a heat detection instrument. I glide at the back of the neck. It's called a nervoscope, and I detect which way the heat's at. And then I do a leg check to see which side the body's pulling up. I'll have them lay down on their back and get it perfectly straight as they think they are, and usually they're curved. Now I'll lay them straight, and then I'll palpate and find some hot spots, and I'll conclude through years of experience what bone needs to go in which position to create that unlockment, and then I make the correction, and then let the body heal itself.
All right. And how important is it for people to do follow-up exercises to help stabilize the supporting muscles in that region?
It's very important. I stressed stretching mainly, not really exercises, because most people, when you put them on exercises, they're not going to do it. But yoga seems a little bit, it's kind of fun. Most people, I recommend certain yoga.
Great.
We should go back to that. People won't do them. Let's talk about that, because that's sort of that is the real essence of getting results. We had a patient, I remember it was like in our first year that we were open, and somebody came back, and she'd done every single thing that we'd asked her to do. She had done some Tai Chi, she had stretched, she did she
changed
her
diet.
She did every single thing, and she felt
phenomenal.
She went
to the library and got books that I recommended, and I said, why are you're like one of the only people who actually does everything I tell you to do. Why are you doing it? She goes, why would I waste your time and my money and not do what you told me to do? I thought, wow, what
exactly.
A smart person.
And you wish that's all you took care of every day.
Right.
But it's an extreme of both,
And it feels like our work as holistic practitioners is motivating that inspiration, is to really help people get excited about the journey and the discovery of self-care. And not that it's something you just have to tolerate on the way to getting out of pain and back into the saddle of your life, but really to actually the process of discovery, learning, and actually learning your body and getting in touch with your body. And then you can pass that knowledge on to, of course, your kids and to your coworkers, your friends, your family. and it's liberating. Everybody likes to feel good, and nobody wants to age prematurely and become disabled in various ways. But you know, if you look around, as you're saying, you know, the evidence is pretty clearly that that's the case. You know, we're seeing an awful lot of that. So any tricks that you have for really helping inspire folks to you know, take charge?
You sort of sometimes you just sort of throw your hands up and you know, and Doc, when do you want me to do that? And I said, well, I say, well, you asked me that last time and you never listened. why? So what, are you really serious? This is what I would do. But it's all in education. It's communication.
Yeah, sure.
It's communicating with them.
Yeah, and if people know why they haven't, you know, I often get into the argument with people over giving up coffee, you know, and, you know, coffee, I mean, some people, coffee is not a problem, but a lot of people come in with things where I know they're adrenal fatigue, you know, they've got exercise-induced asthma, they've got joint issues, their sugar is another one, but they have enough things going on, and so I'll mention it the first time during the consult, and I'll get the coffee face. Like, I don't want to give up the coffee, and, you know, But then as we go through and we talk about it, you know, the person starts to understand, like, all of my symptoms, you know, may be potentially affected by coffee or sugar, as Kevin was saying, is another one, or whatever it is that I'm asking them to do. If they can see how, you know, it's like the idea, we want to empower people, and we want people to take control of their own lives. Ultimately, we want to kind of make ourselves obsolete. You know, we want to be a resource for them, but our goal is to get people healthy, and they refer other people to us when they're doing well.
And that they've really learned something as a result of the experience, much like you, Catherine, like you said, the school of hard knocks. Well, I mean, that's where you often, all of us, get our deepest learning, and the transformation comes from that. But boy, wouldn't it be great to help people suffer less in that process? And, you know, it's the thing with actually with diet change or coffee or sugar, you know, we're not asking people to stop things for the rest of their life, but to learn, say, hey, take it out for 4 weeks, see what you notice. And then you're not taking my word for it. You're not listening to some expert, but your own body. And that's reinforcing that internal listening.
And I think the most important part is if they know up front what you do, like, what I do as a upper cervical chiropractor is only a small part of it. But if they learn, if I can remember to empower them, what the whole body, if we're going to look into this and then this and this, but we have to take a step at a time, I think they get more out of it. Rather than say, you need to lose some weight, like some people say to my doc, you know, that's just, where do they go with that?
It's not necessarily helpful,
It's not helpful. Yeah. We need to get off the sugar. Well, how do I do that? Mm-hmm. You know, well, okay, these are some things that, so we are holding, we're going to be holding classes there for, so they can come in and sit with other people, and when they sit with other people, it seems to be like they're more accountable to themselves. Mm-hmm. Other people are interested in this, and they more, and then they can get the knowledge there, like, wow, I didn't know that.
And somebody can help them through that process, like, how do I go about giving up sugar, and what kinds of things can I substitute, and, you know,
And that's what I bring. You know, Catherine brings what she brings, and we have a nutritionist on board too, and that can take up those other aspects of their health, of this holistic approach. And of course, you people with your acupuncture, you know, we have it all right here without going into other aspects of Western medicine. Mm-hmm.
So we have a couple minutes before we go on break. So it's interesting. We've listened to Catherine, and we've listened to Dr. Tom, and you guys have kind of a very different experience coming to where you are now. So just let's maybe start talking a little bit about how you work together, how that works.
Yeah, and maybe just the vision and the mission of Alaska Healing Touch and where you see it going.
Just do that in 2 minutes, and then
we'll
start that process, and then we'll interrupt on the break, and then we'll get back into it.
Okay. Well, I would have to say, the reason that we decided to bring our talents to this clinic was because Tom did an atlas adjustment on me, and I have hardly any migraines anymore. And this is after 20 years.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I brought what I have to the table, a chemical-free environment, and he benefited. Wow. Maybe this is like more than just us out there.
So we actually started this back in December of last year, and then just worked on it all the way through until we got our doors open at the office in August of this year.
So you were finding that, Dr. Tom, that when you'd treat people, even when you do that Atlas Axis adjustment, there would still be people that wouldn't get better?
Yeah, there's something slowing them down. Mm-hmm. Something slowing that process down. And when she told me her story, and I there was people in my life, I couldn't help this person. They were coming with me with the same thing she talked about, the history that she had, and I didn't know what to do. Now I can at least empower them with the knowledge of where to look. Are they mold poisoned? Are they chemical sensitive? Is it the cologne in their environment, the air they breathe, the water they drink, the food?
This is fantastic.
Yeah, this is a good place to take a break, and then we'll come back and talk some more about those specifics.
Yeah, stay with us. You're listening to Bridge to Everywhere, and Kevin and Sam interviewing Catherine Hollingsworth and Dr. Tom Taylor in their new clinic, Alaska Healing Touch.
Support for Radio Free Palmer comes from the Palmer Downtown Deli. Palmer Downtown Deli provides free Wi-Fi in an informal, casual, conversational environment, or for just individual solace. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner dishes, wraps, specialty sandwiches, soups, or desserts, including gelato Italian ice cream, are offered along with coffee, espresso, tea, specialty waters, or drinks. Music Arts performing live can be enjoyed every Saturday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. A comprehensive summary of Palmer Downtown Deli's menu options can be found at palmerdeli.com. And phone orders at 745-4100 are available as well. The Palmer Downtown Deli is located on South Alaska Street. The Palmer Downtown Deli, supporting community connectivity and community radio.
You're listening to Radio Free Palmer, KVRF 89.5. If you'd like to get involved with community radio, contact us at radiofreepalmer.org. This is your chance to invent community radio in Sutton, Butte, Chickaloon, Palmer, and the surrounding areas. Big Cabbage Radio!
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Bridge to Everywhere with Sam and Kevin, and we're here today in the studio with Dr. Tom Taylor and Catherine Hollingsworth, and we're talking about environmental sensitivities, and we're talking specifically about two different ways to get underneath the problem. Catherine's been talking about the various types of environmental sensitivities and her experience with exposure and figuring out a way through that process, and now after a lot of years, she's actually, are you migraine-free? Actually, or close
pretty
to
much,
it.
I'll probably have one a month now.
But that's amazing.
Oh, and gosh,
yeah. And Dr. Taylor's been talking about the particular type of chiropractic that he does, the upper cervical adjustment. So,
adjustment, Catherine's history of migraines totally shifted.
Shifted. It brought my life. I am actually a partner now in this endeavor, where I thought I had the rest of my life pretty much locked in my house.
Wow.
Yeah, so let's talk about now somebody coming into your clinic, how that intake process works and how they start figuring out what, am I actually somebody with environmental sensitivities and what can I do about it?
Well, we have a health screen that we do, and we're perfecting that all the time. It's very organic. Basically, they would come in usually with a chiropractic issue, and so Dr. Tom will take them through his screening and work his magic with chiropractic treatment, specifically the Atlas adjustment. To add two things into the mix at one time isn't a good idea, because you need to see at what point the problem was addressed. And when that isn't happening, or there are obvious issues that are evident in this health screen, which could be diet, and they could be how's your workplace and your home. He's now working with them, forming a relationship, getting comfortable, they're comfortable with him. Now this ease begins to reveal that there are other things. So he can recommend a nutritional screening, and we have two people, both graduates of the integrative nutrition, and that approach is a body, mind, spirit. It's basically not your red jello diet.
Uh-huh.
It's much more than that. It's how do you use nutrition? What is nutrition? And that it could be, if you're having an emotional experience, a tough time with things, you aren't going to utilize the nutrition. It could be about the kind of water they're drinking, and maybe they're so toxic that they have a lot of weight on and the cells can't actually use the nutrition that they're getting either. Or they have these other medicated symptoms pharmaceuticals and so on that are adding to some problems. All of this then can be screened out. Then there are still some problems remaining. That's where I come in. And then I have an assessment that I can do, and I brought the questions. There's a wonderful test, subjective for the most part, that was designed by Dr. Claudia Miller at the University of Texas in San Antonio. And she came up with a quick survey for environmental sensitivities. And these questions have been asked. In fact, there was a study, two-year study, that just released in July in the Annals of Family Medicine. And it showed a high percentage of people come to a family doctor, and they are exhibiting various symptoms, but they're never screened at that point for what is underlying those symptoms. They're medicating the symptoms. And then they just go on. And that's why I alluded earlier about the average person seeks care, and they get 10 doctors, and after a while they're told it's all in their head.
There's these various syndromes, these little label boxes that kind of, you know, that are hard to tease apart. There isn't real methods to differentiate.
Yes. And a lot of doctors don't want to. And in fact, in medical school, they're discouraged. You don't want to get into environmental medicine, way too political, don't go there. Because it is. There is an agenda here that's not ours.
Well, and there's
what
a
does
time
that mean? Can you just elaborate on that, the political agenda? Is it a political agenda at the level of healthcare delivery, or?
No, it's much bigger than that. The chemical companies would be implicated in very many of these things, and there's a huge amount of money involved.
So if data starts building up that's really able to identify the source of illness and tie it directly to a chemical product, that's going to really open up incredible class action lawsuits across the spectrum.
So, Monsanto and DuPont.
Right.
We'll just put those out there.
Yes, and I think most people who are picking up your show probably have an awareness at some point of entry here. This isn't unfamiliar. It's everywhere. But it actually keeps people in a unhealthy situation, because you cannot address these issues if it's not politically okay to talk about.
Well, if you don't have something that's a legitimate complaint, you know, and that would be like it's not covered under insurance, then you get marginalized. And then you have to figure out a way to pay for it out of your own pocket if your insurance isn't covering it. And then, well, what am I going to do? And so, you know, you can end up, it can be pushed back, so it's really not mainstream, so people feel like it's my problem, you know. So that's why you were talking about social media, where you can interact with other people and you can see where
this
lots
is part
of
what
issue.
We can do at the clinic. And I have to say that you mentioned empowerment. What I want to do with people, and our whole philosophy at the clinic, is empowering people by educating them, but more importantly, validating them. They aren't making these things up. It's their reality. Whatever it looks like is very real to them. And a lot of the people who have the chemical issues or who have other environmental issues, which now we're finding is from electromagnetic and so on.
Which we definitely want to get into, by the way.
We will.
Well, the main thing is that they're so discredited, and they begin to question themselves. You know, am I really just totally off of it here? And high suicide rate, because people don't have any way to address this. They can't really go out in the world. What's wrong with them? And families that abandon people. Tragic stories over and over and over.
And not to mention, one thing you were saying about the difficulty in addressing this as a Western physician, the way insurance bills for services, I mean, this is time consuming. This is not something that you're going to go into a doctor's office and spend 5 minutes and get a diagnosis. This is where you're going to spend hours and hours and hours with a practitioner to sort out what's going on. And so there's an issue too. Why somebody might not choose to go into environmental medicine, because you're really going to. It takes a lot of time. This is not a quick office visit that you can just reimburse for in a 5 minute office slot. And so
And the other thing I was thinking about, we're talking about very extreme expressions of environmental illness, but there's a whole spectrum, right?
Yes,
of
there is.
And a progression.
Yes.
And so, and so differentiating out at earlier stage so you can intervene is going to be key. But there's also, it seems like, so many variables, how people are eating, you know, whether they're actually chronically stressed from other factors in their life. Mm-hmm. So bringing in the holistic perspective, it takes a tremendous clinical capacity or a capacity to to work with people to really pull this apart and see what's what.
Mm-hmm. It does, and there are methods of doing this. There's an excellent way. These questions in the quick analysis. I'm just going to
go ahead and read those. That'd be great.
There were actually 9 epidemiology studies done around the world, so we have some hardcore evidence here. The questions are: if diesel or gas engine exhaust bothers you, does tobacco smoke, insecticide, exposure to gas like when you're pumping your car, paint thinner, cleaning products, disinfectants, Clorox, certain perfumes or air fresheners, we mentioned Febreze, fresh tar, asphalt, nail polish, hairspray, new furnishings like carpet, plastic. Sometimes, you know, when you open a new product, mm-hmm. and like a shower curtain, and you just can't even be in the bathroom with it. These are the main questions.
Well, I got yes on every one of those. Yeah. Every one of those are like kryptonite for me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you're actually reminding me. I can't remember. I saw this video. It's probably been a couple of months, but it was these two guys going around with some device to measure volatile organic compounds in the background air, and they went to L.A., like downtown L.A., to see how, because everybody's heard how bad mm-hmm. the air was outside in L.A., and it actually wasn't that bad outside, like even like by the road, and then they went into a nail salon, and they ran out screaming. I mean, they could not believe how much, like walking. So I think a lot of people think that the outdoor air is where it's, especially if you live in a big city, mm-hmm. that's where you're going to encounter this pollution. Because mm-hmm. some of those things were outdoor, but some of those things are indoor, like the perfumes, like the Febreze, like the nail salon kind of place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, or even getting your hair colored. I remember sitting in the chair one time, like the one time I decided to get highlights, and saying something to the guy working on my hair. How can you stand that smell? And he goes, what smell?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And there is a physiology behind that we know. And I think the important thing here is to recognize the politics are covering it up. The people aren't validated. And mm-hmm. so that's the trail.
And the medical system is limited with its capacity to address it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we have now many, many ways that people are finding their way through this and out the other side. But they're not going to go back and drink the poison.
Right.
And that's a big thing. Is it a life change? If you want health, you have to make lifestyle changes. And we know that's true. The other part of it is, well, how do you, and where do you get the support? And Dr. Tom alluded to that, too. We can give them that kind of support at the clinic. There are means to go into a workplace and analyze. I can do a quick 10-minute assessment. There are so many things that I recognize as being highly problematic that it doesn't take very long to figure the big culprits. By eliminating or changing a few things, they might have enough improvement that now they're either slowing it down or they're going to give themselves the space to allow their body to recover. But I wanted to address that. Not only is the fragrance a big, big part, that's one of, I think, the worst ones for people. And the CDC itself recognizes that fragrances are harming health. And when you tell people that, the CDC has a policy, internal policy, on their offices. And this is for everybody, even guest research people, visitors, even the spaces that they lease. And I'm going to tell you, that's kind of shocking, but here's what they have for forbidden things. Incense, candles, reed diffusers, fragrance-emitting devices of any kind, you know, the kind you find in public bathrooms, wall-mounted devices, disinfectants, potpourri, plug-in spray, and air fresheners, the urinal and toilet blocks, and other deodorizer products. And they even go so far as to say that people should make a point to not use fabric softeners.
So that is, say again, that all of those criteria are the workplace environment protocols?
Workplace environment protocols.
So the CDC is saying these things shouldn't be in our environment,
that's
and yet
correct.
There they are on the shelf at the supermarket.
That's
we
correct.
Can all buy it.
And it's,
that's correct.
And is that going through the FDA, that all the fragrances, is
well,
that
well, these things are not
body?
Regulated.
Oh.
They won't come out and actually say to the public, you can buy these things, but they're going to harm you. And I think it's the biggest cover-up we have, mm-hmm. that we create factories that use our environmental resources and create these poisons and then brilliantly market them to people so you go buy them with your own money and bring them home and poison your family. It's amazing.
Wow.
And it happens every day.
And it's the same thing as low-fat sodas. Same sugar-free, added more sugar and more sweeteners, artificial sweeteners, same kind of thing.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So I have a question. So in our homes, we can actually learn about this, and we can make changes in our household environment.
Yes.
What about when you're working in a place that clearly might be affecting your health? Are employers, responsive to these kind of concerns and making changes?
Well, they
what
are.
Do you do?
They are. In fact, the Americans with Disabilities Act is in a process right now of being refined so that you can accommodate highly chemically sensitive people. And once again, the CDC internal policy actually recognizes chemical sensitivities, and they address it in their policies. You can get accommodations. We find that one of the ways that people begin to have some recovery in health is because they educate their coworkers. And there will be the occasional problem where somebody just really wants to get out and, sabotage. And there's not much you can do about that part. But by having a policy that says, we're sorry, but these things aren't allowed in our office, that person can still have a productive life. Mm-hmm. But with technology, sometimes that means that they have to work from home and telecommute. This isn't so far out of the realm, and there are a lot of people doing that. In my case, my whole profession was very toxic to me, and I didn't get to make an active choice because that was not recognized. Indeed, I was, already on disability before I even identified what the problem was. But I found that now I could come back into the workplace because we're building a clinic that I can work in, as well as other staff that have the same issue with chemicals. And it's the only way that I could feel comfortable enough to be able to keep myself together.
And sure. It seems to me, and we're talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act, mm-hmm. that, this is beyond putting in, a handicap bar in the toilet or making a wider door. Yeah. You're actually talking about something that's going to benefit the whole workforce.
And, of course, it'll affect the bottom line positively.
Right. And less people getting sick and more, and so all the kinds of things that you associate with just oh, yeah, I get 6 colds a year, and, I just always feel run down. I'm kind of tired, and I need a cup of coffee to keep going in the afternoon. I need my sugar in the morning, all those kinds of things would go away. So it's not just that one person is actually having an overt problem in the office, but likely other people are having problems.
Yeah.
It is
the
whole spectrum.
It is. Yeah. And I know Dr. Tom can validate this. When he came into my environment, which was chemical-free, fragrance-free, I even have a sign on the front door, and I have let repairmen know they're not welcome. They have to reschedule.
Right.
I've handed out white zoot suits, I call them, the little Tyvek suits. Please zip up in this. Keep all the cigarette stuff inside. Mm-hmm. That's the only way you can come into my space, and I'll wear a mask. Mm-hmm. What you find is when you eliminate these, your ability to actually sense these chemicals begins to return slowly, slowly, slowly. We are in a case of overload. It's sensory overload. And you don't realize at the time that every exposure to these things, when you wear perfume, there's a day when you get up, instead of one squirt, you do 2. And the next day you might do 3. And this is a progression because you can't smell it anymore. But to somebody like me, it's a bath. You want to say you're stewing in it, and don't you realize that you announce yourself way ahead. The fragrances in perfume right now, the chemicals used in perfume are 95 to 100% derived from petroleum products. These are not the same perfumes.
Big surprise, right? Well, here's a question, because these things are harmful, period. And so the fact that somebody is sensitive to them isn't something wrong with them. It's something very right with them, right? Because these things are all toxic. Why shouldn't the body react?
Yes.
So that's just an interesting flip on it, that these are the canaries maybe in the coal mine that are sort of really, letting everybody else know, hey, we have an issue here that has to be addressed.
That's right. And there are even some people that are chemically sensitive who've dedicated themselves to going where no other person can go, just because they react so predictably to a specific chemical that they can actually go in and by how they're reacting tell you if that's present.
Canary for hire.
So their detection is more subtle and more refined.
Yes. And there is one woman, Susan Malloy. She's an amazing woman. She has for years put herself in public buildings so that she can tell people which chemicals are present and whether it's safe or not.
Well, this brings the other question is, and I don't know that our environment is going to change in the near future. Mm-hmm. You know, there is more and more toxicity. How do we stay strong? We don't want to become weakened by this. What can we do to actually build up our strength and not be as affected? Is there things we can do?
Well, I like to tell people, first of all, if it's good for you, you're probably going to have to pay for it. The health care that we hear people say, I have to have a job, I have to have my health care, you know, my health insurance, it's not health, it's disease management. Mm. And if you understand that you could spend a considerable amount of money on supplements, nutrition, on holistic support from acupuncture, chiropractic, the many ways that you can get it, that's a better use of your dollar in the long run. The rest of your insurance could be considered accident insurance. And put in a corner for that. The first thing is they must take power back. Consumer spending, you can vote with your dollars. So educating people what to spend their dollars on is a vote for that. Organic foods, non-fragrance, organic bedding, an organic mattress, to refuse to use a cell phone, if that's even becoming remotely possible. The things that you know are beginning to take down the quality of life all across the planet. If you vote with your dollars, you can change things in a certain way, but you're going to be better for the experience no matter what happens. The other thing is meeting people that are also experiencing this, and I think the support and validation of just talking to somebody, this is my story, my personal story. Oh yeah, I have that experience too, and now what do I do? Well, I have, you know, all these people around the globe with all these problems, and the epidemiology studies have shown that this is about 1 in 4 people now, which is more prevalent than diabetes. This is very real, very common. So now you have a number of people, you can begin to say, what's worked for you, and what's worked for you, and how have you gotten back this amount of your function? There are a lot of excellent nutritional programs right now. Dr. Martin Paul in Washington State is recognized all around the globe for his nutritional therapy involving largely glutathione. And the method of delivery of the glutathione, what works the best. We have a compounding pharmacy in Seattle that close that can help with highly specialized pure compounds of nutrients. We have organic food all over here. It's easier now than ever to get organic food. It will cost you more, but in the long run, it saves you all that you
might. Well, that is your health care. Yeah, that's how we see it. You know, we're spending money on that, so we don't have to spend money on doctors.
Exactly.
We are losing our minds, right? Dementia is actually increasing at an extraordinary rate.
Yeah, I just read an article about Alzheimer's, how it's 2 billion people.
They're projecting, I think, in the next 50 years that the number of people afflicted by dementia might increase to 2 billion people. That's how, it's the big thing that nobody's really talking about, how serious the loss of our cognitive, higher cognitive functioning, like our whole identity, our capacity to function in the world, and the nervous system is actually becoming, it's deteriorating.
This is where the chiropractic that Dr. Tom does and what I can help people by empowering and educating, cleaning up their home, making the decisions that they can to protect the health of their family. It's about bringing these together at that point, the central nervous system.
Could you say a little bit about that, Dr. Tom?
Well, what I bring is really a small part of it, but it's a big part of it. If we eliminate the atlas subluxation, the pressure up there, that's the area of the brainstem. The brainstem is what controls the whole planet, the human brainstem, because it controls all the functions. The very first cells that are formed from the embryo are the brainstem cells, because they have to have it has to have a nervous system intact before all the organs can get together in systems to become one big giant organism. So. That's the first thing we want to eliminate, in my perspective. But the other thing is that these there's other big thing that we have to look at is the molds in these old buildings that are affecting people.
That's a big issue right here.
Black mold hearing about it.
EMF is a big one that feeds these mold. Catherine could talk about that more too. Those are things that set off these triggers and set off these reactions that the people run to get a medical prescription for this or for that, or psychogenic drugs for it, when it's not only in their food they eat, it's things they breathe, but it's their environment, it's their mold. Mm-hmm.
So there's a connection between the EMF and the black mold?
There
this is really good, because I was going to fight Kevin we have like a limited amount of time. I was going to go, okay, I'll flip before it. We're going to do black mold or we're going to do EMF?
I was going to go for EMF.
I know, and I was going to go for black mold, so we're going to talk for both.
It all comes together. Yeah. It all comes together. And what we have now are some actual studies in laboratories that show that when mold in a petri dish is exposed to Wi-Fi, it grows 600 times faster.
No! Oh, my God!
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's scary.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Is there a specific bandwidth? I wonder if it's the G?
No, we both had the experience of noticing when we cranked up to the next level on our router that we both felt just really uncomfortable for a while. So
that's very real. It affects your EEG readings. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of people look at it. Your blood under a microscope, it stacks up in coins and it blocks your arteries.
Mm-hmm.
There's another component here that ties together, and that's the mercury in your fillings. Mm-hmm. Acts as a magnet. And so if you have candida and you haven't gotten the mercury out and you're around Wi-Fi, the candida is going to go nuts.
Mm-hmm. So the mercury in the mouth affects the candida, and the EMF affects the candida as well. So somebody who's trying to do a yeast elimination diet for the rest of their life, but if they don't clean up the mercury and they don't limit their exposure to EMF, it's not going to change.
So if somebody works,
all they're doing is controlling it.
Somebody works in a mold contaminated building.
Yeah.
In internet technology, and there's Wi-Fi signals going all over the place, and they have mercury fillings, and they have sugar in their diet, and they have a yeast issue. Look out!
They're in trouble.
Okay. What do you have? You see them every day. Yeah. And you see them every day, and those are the people that are. That's our dementia. Yeah. We have a Congress full of them.
And do you recommend to people when they come in, if they've still have mercury fillings, are you recommending that they go get those taken out?
I would absolutely. It changed me. I couldn't even go down the road without getting a horrible headache, like nails.
Is there someone in Anchorage or in the Valley who does it?
There are several dentists who are very tuned into this. Yes, there are. And we've got a list of those, a list of integrative medicine doctors.
Great.
Yeah, places. Well, maybe as we wind down, we'll just have you share the information so folks can get in touch with you, just to make sure.
How would they get in touch with you if they want to learn more, or they want to set up an appointment with you or with Dr. Tom?
Alaska Healing Touch, and the number in Palmer is 707-0298.
And you guys have a website too?
We do, alaskahealingtouch.com.
Great.
Now, are there websites or books you can refer for chemical sensitivity to learn more?
Yes, there are. There are many, many things. I would caution, because some of them are quite radical, but there are some very good ones. And one of the best ones, I think, is it's a website called Planet Thrive. She does an excellent job of moderating her site.
So Planet Thrive. And have you heard of survivingmold.com?
Yes,
have you seen that? Any comments on that?
Yes.
That site?
He's one of a couple doctors in the United States quite versed in mold. He writes an excellent book, Mold Survivors, and talks about Washington and our Congress and Senate.
And I don't know if you have seen the video on one of the technology, entertainment, and design talks. Was a gentleman from, I think it was Delhi, India, who had a lot of environmental sensitivities. And he found that there were three plants in particular that helped eliminate stuff from the air. Like, he actually has a building now with like 40,000 square feet. It's the cleanest building in one of the most toxic cities in India. Mm-hmm. And I think it's mother-in-law's tongue, it's pothos, and then it's like a palm. It's some kind of a acacia palm. I can't remember.
Yes.
But there are those three plants. And I love this.
The first one is a snake plant, right?
Yeah, that's just mother-in-law's tongue is a snake plant. But he has this line in the video, which I love. It's a four-minute video. If you put in TED Talks and clean environmental air, it'll probably come up. And he says, you could live in a bottle with these three plants, with the top on the bottle, and you wouldn't die, not even a little.
Not even a little. I love it. These are pain plants. Mm-hmm. And I do recommend to people that they clean their indoor with plants.
With plants. Yes.
But you have to watch because the soil is mold.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. And we're down to our last minute here. Can somebody wear something to protect them from the EMFs? Is there some kind of product that
Can we put tinfoil on our head?
I don't know. I mean,
there are. But there are many different ways you can address the EMF. And the main thing is to get the sleeping environment. That's where you do your recuperative healing.
So turn off your Wi-Fi at night?
Turn off your Wi-Fi. Throw the circuit breaker.
Okay. Great.
Okay, you've been listening to Dr. Tom Taylor and Catherine Hollingsworth of Alaska Healing Touch Holistic Healing Center here in downtown Palmer. And where is your office located?
We're in downtown Palmer as well, across from the Matsu Bureau offices in the Denali Square Professional Building.
Wonderful. So AlaskaHealingTouch.com to learn more. And thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on The Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links and resources from our guests and show topics.
Programming support for KVRF Community Radio is provided by Gelato Cadrino Alaska, serving the tasty Italian ice cream to patrons both in Wasilla and now Palmer. Using imported ingredients and local valley dairy products, Gelato Cadrino Alaska uses a fourth-generation Italian gelato.
Motorcycles, where the circuit's like freeways.